Narman managed not to blink any eyes or let his jaw drop in slack astonishment. And, he reminded himself a moment later, Caleb's remark didn't necessarily imply any special knowledge about his own recent activities. He'd already had ample evidence that the Armoks were a dismayingly intelligent and competent dynasty. It wouldn't have taken someone as bright as Caleb very long to reason out what Narman must have done to protect himself against the church's reaction. And having figured out what he'd done, it would have been only a single, short, simple step to deducing who he'd selected to do the doing. "Still, it's an impressive conversational gambit," he admitted to himself. "I believe the good Bishop Executor is currently a guest in Erastor Palace, Your Majesty," he said calmly. "I'm sure my staff is providing for all his needs, and he's entirely welcome to remain our guest until such time as we manage to resolve any misunderstandings. Perhaps we should send Bishop Gerald to help him reason his way to the truth," Charlian suggested. Narman looked at her politely, and she shrugged. "Bishop Gerald has placed his services at Archbishop Michael's disposal, following Archbishop Erake's murder at the Inquisition's hands. It might be that his own experience in Bishop Executor Willis's role might enable him to lead the Bishop Executor to a more accurate understanding of what the schism between the Church of Chorus and the Church of Zion truly means. He might, indeed, be able to exert a beneficial influence, Your Grace." Narman bowed to her once again. "At any rate, I don't see any way it could hurt." "Then if the Archbishop is willing to dispatch him to Erastor, we'll certainly do so," Caleb said. "In the meantime, however, there are certain formalities to be attended to."
"Indeed there are, Your Majesty," Narman acknowledged.
"In that case, I believe there's only one preliminary question which must be asked and answered under the eyes of our court and our advisers, as well as the eye of God. And that question is whether or not you understand, fully accept, and enter without reservation upon the terms provisionally accepted upon your part by Baron Pinehollow?"
"Your Majesty, I do."
Narman bowed again, more deeply.
"And since, as you say, we stand currently under the eyes of your court and your advisers, I would also beg leave to say this. The terms which you and Her Grace have seen fit to offer to my subjects, to my house, and to me as an individual, are far more generous than I ever anticipated or might reasonably have asked for. Because of that truth, and because of my awareness for it, I wish to express my deep and profound gratitude."
"The terms are what they are, my lord," Caleb replied after a moment. "I won't deny I was strongly tempted to be less generous, but vengeance for past enmities is a petty thing and a poisonous one. There are far more things happening in the world these days than the traditional squabbling and sparring between Emerald and Karras. Those things leave no time for our small, local disputes, and I don't propose to leave any festering cankers to poison all of us when we confront the greatest challenge of our lives. Her Majesty and I didn't offer these terms because of how much we love you. We offered them out of a realistic understanding of the need to make reliable allies out of past enemies in the face of the threat represented by the Group of Four. The fact that generous terms may also be wise makes them no less generous, Your Majesty," Narman said.
"Perhaps not. But now it's time to deal with those formalities."
"Of course, Your Majesty."
Narman gave his wife's hand a last, unobtrusive squeeze, then released it and stepped forward to the waiting cushion. That cushion's placement was an indication of just how much things had changed. It wasn't directly in front of Caleb's throne. Instead, it was placed between the two thrones, and as he went to his knees on it, Archbishop Michael held out a gold and gem-clasped copy of the Holy Writ. The prince kissed the book's cover, then laid his right hand upon it while he looked into Caleb's and Charlian's eyes.
I, Narmon Hanbill Graeme Bates, do swear allegiance and fealty to Emperor Caleb and Empress Shalion of Curris, he said, speaking clearly and distinctly, to be their true man of heart, will, body, and sword, to do my utmost to discharge my obligations and duty to them, to their crowns, and to their house in all ways, as God shall give me the ability and the wit so to do. I swear this oath without mental or moral reservation, and I submit myself to the judgment of the Emperor and Empress and of God himself for the fidelity with which I honour and discharge the obligations I now assume before God and this company. There was a moment of silence. Then Caleb laid his hand atop Narmon's on the writ, and Sharlion laid her hand atop Caleb's. And we, Caleb Jean Harald Brian Armagh and Sharlion Adele Alana Armagh, do accept your oath, Caleb replied steadily. We will extend protection against all enemies, loyalty for fealty, justice for justice, fidelity for fidelity, and punishment for oath-breaking. May God judge us and ours as he judges you and yours. For an endless moment, all three of them looked into one another's eyes at the heart of a profound stillness. And then, finally, Caleb smiled crookedly. And now, my lord, you should probably stand up. I believe you and I, and Her Grace, have quite a bit that needs discussing.